Hi, welcome to another episode of We Used to Be Best Friends. I am your host, Sabrina, and on today's episode, I will be sharing my story. If you've been following me on TikTok, you know that I built my platform during my healing journey after experiencing a very detrimental friendship breakup. And during that healing journey, I started to discover through therapy that I actually went through emotional abuse. And also with a lot of research and a lot of discussion of the story that I went through, I also realized that I experienced a covert narcissistic person. So before we dive in, I want you guys to know that this is not a very easy thing for me to share, mainly because it is still painful. It is very, very embarrassing for me and also a little bit shameful for me, even though it shouldn't be. It's something that happened to me and I shouldn't feel shame for it, but I still do feel slightly ashamed because I kept this person in my life even though I saw how badly they treated me. This wasn't like a first time thing. This has been an ongoing thing and I just wasn't strong enough to remove them from my life. I wasn't strong enough to walk away from that friendship. And honestly, I also had this idea of what love was. I thought that you can love a monster and that you could love them out of being a monster. And I have soon to learn that that is not something that is true. So yes, this feels still a little shameful for me, mainly because I'm still working on the self-forgiveness part where it's not entirely my fault. And there are parts where I have taken a lot of accountability and responsibility for the parts that I played. But there's a lot of things that happened throughout the story that I had no control over. And I wish I would have behaved in a different way or reacted in a different way. But I tended to freeze a lot in the fight flight response. I just froze. I froze. I didn't say what I should have said. I didn't speak up when I should have spoken up. And this whole journey through TikTok and healing has finally got me to say what I need to say and to speak my truth and to finally speak up for myself. And hopefully that could motivate and inspire those of you that have gone through what I've gone through or find a similar experience and finally have the courage to stand up for yourself and speak up for yourself. I hope you guys are ready for this. I will be changing names in this story to keep it anonymous and respectful, because honestly, it is not about them. It is about what happened. It is about the behaviors and how the behaviors affected me. And what I want you guys to get out of this is to really start paying attention to the behaviors of people rather than the person themselves. Because honestly, that's how I got myself into this mess. I was paying attention to the person and how much I loved the person rather than how they were treating me, rather than how they were behaving towards me. And at the end of the day, the way they behave and how that behavior impacts you is the most important. All right, so let's get started on the story of who the hell I was best friends with. I'll be calling her Serena since she reminds me of Serena Vanderwoodson from the show Gossip Girl. And honestly, I feel like that's what I went through, was a Serena and Blair toxic friendship in New York City of all places. So it's kind of ironic that it's really close to one of my favorite shows and I kind of experienced the Gossip Girl experience. So our friendship began when I was about 16 years old, and we met at a sporting event in Florida. During that time, I did not have any friends. I was homeschooled because of the sport that I played, and all I did was really just do schoolwork at home and just go train. And that was the gist of my life at that time. I grew up in a narcissistic family dynamic with very, very strict parents that didn't really allow me to express myself or to be myself in any way. And anytime I expressed myself, it wasn't to their liking. There was a lot of belittlement. There was a lot of just like name calling. It was just not the greatest childhood experience, to be completely honest. And I felt very isolated for a lot of the years because all I really did was do schoolwork at home and go train and then go to different tournaments. And the only time I was able to socialize or to meet other people that were my age were at tournaments. But my parents were so strict that they said that all these people are your competition and you shouldn't be making friends there. You shouldn't be talking to anybody. So I felt very, very alone. I felt like I wasn't allowed to make friends and wasn't allowed to talk to people because like if my parents were watching me, they would like pull me from talking to people. And it wasn't the greatest experience. However, there was one day during a rain delay where everybody had to go inside and my parents left to get food or something, but they weren't there. So I finally felt like I had the freedom to talk to somebody. And I saw this girl and I just started kind of starting a conversation. I was so nervous because I was also very socially awkward. I had no social skills. I didn't know how to strike up a conversation. I didn't know how to speak to another human being my age. And on top of that, a lot of the girls my age that I've met throughout my life have been very mean. Like, I was terrified, but I told myself I need to make friends some way, somehow. If not, I'm just going to be like alone forever. So I started striking up a conversation with her and immediately we kind of clicked. We hit it off. And from there, that's where our friendship story kind of started. I soon realized that she kind of had the same life experience as I did. She also grew up in that type of narcissistic family dynamic where her dad was super strict, wouldn't let her do anything. And then her mom was very enabling and it was the exact same dynamic that I was experiencing. She had a brother, I had a brother, like just felt like a mirror image of ourselves. And I finally felt seen. I finally felt like there's this one person in the world that can understand where I'm coming from, understand the pain that I'm going through. I didn't know at that time that that's what trauma bonding is, but we built a friendship out of the mutual experience that we had, that her parents were strict, my parents were strict, and we weren't allowed to have friends, but somehow, some way, somehow, we kind of ended up being friends. She lived about 30 to 40 minutes away from me. So we would always have like practice times together. So we would tell our parents that we're practicing together. And that's the only way they would allow us to kind of hang out is if we were also putting the work in. So like practicing our sport. And at first we would practice together while our parents were around. And then sooner or later, our parents kind of got lazy and they just like left us out there like practicing on our own. And then the more they left us on our own, the more we kind of stopped practicing or just chit-chatting on there. So, and then there were days where we would just bike all the way to a McDonald's and just sit there and order all the fast food and just chit chat and enjoy our time. And what made this whole McDonald's experience so like great was we were allowed to have junk food because we were athletes. So it was one of those things that we couldn't have. So biking secretly and getting McDonald's was like this rebellious thing that we were doing together. And we're sitting there chit chatting and talking about everything and anything, and our jokes were so bad but they were so funny. Like, me and her related, like we related to each other. And she was somebody that really pulled me out of the darkness, because I was in a place where I had absolutely no one. I was very much in a bad place, and she's somebody that kind of finally made me see happiness, see the light, and helped me smile again. She was like that person that was not only my best friend, but she was somebody that could understand the family dynamics that I was going through, could understand the pain that I was going through, could understand the pressure of being an athlete in that sport. And we just related in so many different levels. And she was just like that sister that I've always wanted. And I felt like, you know, she was a blessing to me. That's honestly what I felt like. She was that one person that I feel like I experienced growing up with, that I experienced girlhood into womanhood with, because there are just like so many things that we discussed and talked about that we couldn't talk about to our moms. Because at least for me, my mom was very conservative. So a lot of like any discussion about anything body related was just like a taboo. We don't talk about it. Like, to give you an example, when I got, I'm sorry if this is TMI, but when I got my period at 12 years old, she did not warn me. She did not tell me. I just remember looking down and at my white skirt and seeing that I was gonna die. I thought I was gonna die. I thought there was like, you know, I was bleeding profusely. I was like, that's it. I need to go to the hospital. I need to go die or something. So I thought I was like having a crisis at 12 years old. And I just remember she saw that and she's just like, oh, it's normal. And didn't give me any information after that. There was nothing. It was just like, oh, it's normal. And then that's it. So we never discussed anything that was like women bodies or anything like that. So I just felt like Serena was that one person that we could both have a safe space talking about our female anatomy, as gross as that sounds. So when it came to guys and dating and our first time, like we were there for each other. It was just a safe space, at least for me, it was a safe space to have her around and to have her in my life. And I felt safe enough to share those things with her and be that open and vulnerable with her. And the older we got, the more freedom we started to get from our parents, learning how to drive, getting our license, learning to like go to different places, like the mall. I mean, we were still athletes, so we weren't like partying. We weren't doing all the partying stuff like that everyone was doing at that time. We did a little bit here and there, but it wasn't to the extent of like craziness. We still had to maintain ourselves because we still had practice the next morning. So we couldn't like go crazy, go all out. But we still experienced that together. And that was a beautiful thing. So the older we got, the more freedom we got, the more accessibility we got to cars, the more we started to venture out and make other friends. She ended up making a lot of friends in her neighborhood, and I had friends around my neighborhood too. However, I enjoyed hanging out with her more than everybody else that I was hanging out with. Like, I really enjoyed hanging out with Serena. Like, she was my person. She was my best friend. She was my sister. Hanging out with her was 3,000 times better than hanging out with anyone else, in my opinion. However, things started to change a little bit with our friendship. I did kind of see it when it was happening at the time, but I was also like, you know, I saw red flags, but I thought it was a carnival. Like, I didn't want to acknowledge it. I didn't want to get to the conclusion that, you know, this person, like, that's the end of the friendship. Like, this person's not really putting in effort to see you anymore. And I didn't want to acknowledge that. So I kind of like just kept on holding on, which now I know I shouldn't have. At first, it started very slow, where she would tell me, yeah, let's hang out. And then we'd make plans to hang out on a certain day. And she would tell me, yeah, just get ready. And I will text you and let you know where we're going to meet, where we're going to end up. And then I would drive to meet her. And remember, like, we lived about, I would say, 35, 40 minutes away from each other. So it was a pretty long drive for me. And on top of that, my parents were still strict. Like, I couldn't leave the house past a certain time, like past 10 p.m. My parents wouldn't let me take the car and drive out there, which I understand. So she knew how strict my parents were because her parents were the same. So she knew that she had to tell me at a certain time so I would have the ability to leave early so I could meet them. The first few times she would tell me and she would text me, so I would get up and go and meet them and hang out and have fun. And it would be a lot with like her neighborhood kids. And I just remember every time I went there, like I was a very humorous person. You know, trauma makes you very funny, apparently. So I always would crack jokes and say like the most ridiculous things. Honestly, it's probably really cringe, but I would say a lot of the ridiculous things. And I think a lot of the people in that group really liked me because they'd always joke, they'd always laugh. And now that I think about it, like I do remember her kind of giving me like backhanded comments sometimes, like, or trying to make jokes like me, or trying to make jokes in spite of me, to like kind of like mock something that I was wearing, because I was at that time I was very like in my goth emo phase. So Hot Topic was my friend, so you know, she would make jokes to like kind of mock what I was wearing, or some like I remember one specifically was my accent, because I do sometimes certain words I have a small little accent. So I remember she would kind of mock me in front of others because of that. But I like put that aside because I didn't really think too much of it. I didn't think that she didn't like me. I didn't think that that was a way of showing that she had animosity towards me or anything. Like, I didn't really think much of it. I just, you know, I had very self-deprecating humor at that time. So if someone made fun of me, I was just kind of like, yeah, you're right. Like, okay, that's kind of funny. Even if I didn't believe what they were saying, I just didn't really take offense to it. So I didn't understand what was going on at that time, but so I didn't end up taking it in any negative way. But I honestly think that that was the catalyst, because I think the friends really liked me and they enjoyed my company, and that was kind of like the catalyst of her trying to push me out. So normal thing would happen where she would tell me, yeah, get ready and I'll let you know where we're gonna end up. And you know, at first she would let me know, and then it started being this thing where she would either not let me know at all, like completely disappear ghost, and then later on you'd see pictures and posts of her hanging out with the friends and everything, and I, you know, either would fall asleep waiting for her text message or a phone call, or, you know, like just try to text her and or call her and I wouldn't get a response, nothing. And this happened a few times to where my mom would come into my room and just be like, why are you sitting there waiting for her? Like, why are you sitting there waiting for her to text you? Like, this is not how a friend should treat you. But again, you know, this was my best friend, so I just made all the excuses in the book. I was just like, oh, she's terrible at texting. She's very forgetful sometimes. Like, she's not doing this on purpose. Like, she just gets carried away. Like, all the excuses in the book, I made them. But I did have a conversation with her. I did tell her to please let me know beforehand, and I did remind her that, you know, like my parents are strict, so please let me know at an early time so I can leave on time so I can meet you guys. Like, and you know, she just came up with excuses. She was like, yeah, we just got carried away, I totally forgot, like I didn't do it on purpose, like all of this stuff, which I already made those excuses for her earlier, so I didn't, you know, I was just like, yeah, that's okay, it's fine, I forgave her for that. But then things started to get a little bit more sneaky and a little bit more escalated. So she did end up like texting me. So I would get ready and wait for her text. But she would, this time when I told her, please text me and let me know, she would text me. But she would text me like late enough where my parents are like, no, can't, we're not letting you out. So like, if it was around 10, my curfew, she would either text me right at 10, maybe a few minutes after 10, or like a few minutes before 10 p.m., like right at that cusp where it's like, it's just a little too late, you know, where my parents will look at the clock and be like, it's 10, even though it's like 9:45. They'll think it's 10. They'll round it up and then would not let me take the car and not let me see her. I was very naive at the time. I didn't think that that was suspicious at the time. I didn't believe in my head that my best friend would behave that way on purpose. Again, I made all the excuses in the book. Oh, she's forgetful. She doesn't think about these things. Like, she just, you know, she's very impulsive. She just does things. She doesn't think things through. Like, I made all the excuses in the book, but never once did I actually acknowledge the reality that she did not want me there. So then again, I talked to her about it and I told her, okay, thank you for texting me now, but you're now texting me like a little bit too late and my parents are saying no and I can't come hang out. So can you please at least text me earlier? So that's when she tells me, you know what, why don't you just leave early? Like, don't wait for my text because I don't know. Usually we figure it out like really late. So just leave and then just come to my house and we'll just all leave together. Which to me, I was like, oh my God, that's a great solution. Awesome. I will definitely do that. So the next few times I was getting ready really, really early and I would leave around like 8, maybe 8:30 and head over because it is a 40-minute drive depending on traffic. So I would head over to her place. And I remember the first time that I parked the car and I got there and I rang the doorbell and I said hi to her and I was like, hey, I'm here. She was actually shocked. Like, I remember her face. She was shocked that I was there. I don't think she thought that I was going to go through with that. I don't think she thought that I was actually going to follow through and like get in the car and show up early. I don't know why she thought I wasn't going to do that, but I don't think she thought I was. So she was pretty shocked to see me. I remember like feeling a little weirded out that was her reaction. But again, I pushed it to the side. I didn't think much of it. I was just like, oh, maybe something happened. Like, I made all the excuses in the world again. So we would get in the car and then go meet other friends and like hang out at the mall or just walk around and do absolutely nothing, to be honest. But we're also very young at that point. And we're also not the type to like be out drinking or partying. So we were just like hanging around the mall or going to a movie theater and just doing like normal stuff. So when I got home, in my head, I was like, oh, this is great. Now, all I have to do is just keep doing that, you know, get ready, leave early, and then my parents wouldn't be nervous about me leaving too late. And, you know, they'll be fine as long as I make it on time, like before midnight. They didn't want me out for way too long. But I was like, this is great. Now I can like hang out a little bit longer with her individually before like hanging out with the friends. Yeah, and so I thought, except that's not what ended up happening. So the second time I ended up doing that and driving to her house, I parked the car and I knock on the door, they ring the doorbell, and then her mom answers. And I'm like, oh, hey, is Serena around? Like, we're supposed to go hang out and all that. And she looks at me all confused and she's like, no, Serena left. She literally left a few minutes ago. So I'm just standing there like really confused because I'm like, well, Serena knows that I'm coming. So why wouldn't she wait for me? And why wouldn't she text me and tell me no that she left? Why wouldn't she tell me any of this stuff? Again, I was very naive at that point. I was very much a doormat and I just didn't understand social cues, I think, at that point. And I also had this unbelievable talent for seeing the good in people. So I'm so sorry if you're getting frustrated hearing this because I'm frustrated with myself having to do it. I just remember from there sitting in the car, texting her, calling her, texting our friends, and waiting for anybody to reach back out to me and hearing absolutely nothing from everybody. I sat in that car for like probably a good 45 minutes to an hour before I was like, you know what, whatever, I'm leaving. And I would drive back to my house only to maybe get a text message around like PM and be like, oh my God, so sorry, just saw this. Where I'm just like, uh-huh, I'm sure you just saw this. And that's if I was lucky that she would text me. Most of the time, she would just like completely ignore it. And then when I'd ask her about why didn't you call me back? Hey, what's happening? She's kind of like, oh, what? I never got a call. I never got a text message. Like, okay. So while all that was happening, I started kind of hanging out with other people and doing my own thing on my own a little bit more because I was a little annoyed by her and her behavior. So, and anytime she asked me like what was going on, again, I've made a lot of mistakes in my life and I should have come clean. I should have like been 100% honest with her and been like, I don't like the way you're treating me. But I just told her I didn't like the friends that she hung out with and I'd rather not hang out with them. So that's what I said. Even though I now regret it, I should have just been upfront and honest and told her that she was not being a good friend to me. But again, I feel like if I would have done that, she probably would have ghosted me. We wouldn't be friends. And I probably wouldn't have gone through this trauma. So I really regret not saying anything. Well, anyway, I started hanging out with other people, making new friends and doing my own thing on my own. And then she started seeing how much fun I was having with all these new friends that I was making. And then suddenly would reach out to me and tell me how she doesn't want to hang out with those friends anymore because they're boring. And she wants to hang out with me because I was like, I started getting a lot more freedom and I started having the car more often and I would hang out and like I would be partying a lot that time. Like I would go to like these underground raves and stuff. I thought it was so cool. So she saw how much fun I was having going to like, I think it was called Life in Paint, where it was like a paint party. And I don't know, it was a lot of fun back then, like a lot of fun. It was smaller. The raves were smaller, but it was just so much more fun. She saw how much fun I was having, and that's when she started kind of reaching out to me more and telling me how she doesn't want to hang out with those friends because they're boring and she doesn't like them and all this stuff, and that she wants to hang out with me. And that's when I started inviting her to come hang out with me and go to all these like different parties, and she would stay over at my place and like, or I'd stay over at her place after like an event if it was closer to her house. Like, and we started hanging out a lot more, and I thought like, oh, I had my friend back. So these times were wonderful. They were great. And that's when we started looking into college and trying to figure out our way in college. And she was supposed to go to a school in New York, and I wanted to go to New York so badly. I applied to all schools in New York. I applied to Fordham. I applied to Syracuse. I applied to NYU. CUNY, I think it's called. I applied to Columbia. I applied everywhere in New York. I didn't care where it was. Like, I applied everywhere. But it just wasn't meant to be, especially when it came to getting like a student athlete scholarship. So she ended up going up north and I ended up staying in our hometown and going to school there. So we were a little bit more long distance friends at that time. So I didn't really think much of it. It didn't really impact me too much, the fact that we didn't communicate as often. But, you know, like I would call her or reach out to her and like keep her updated on a lot of things. But now that I think about it, it was a lot of me reaching out to her and contacting her and keeping her in the loop of my life. And if I really think about our conversations, she never really told me anything about her college experience in her life, just like little tidbits here and there, which was like not much information. But again, I'm not the type of person to pry into people's lives. So like, if you want to tell me what you want to tell me, great, but I'm not going to be the one asking questions, which I really regret that I don't have that type of personality, because I think I would have learned a lot of things a lot quicker if I would have started asking a lot more questions. So a lot of times during our breaks, our school break, spring break, all that stuff, I would invite her. I would invite her to come stay at my dorm, meet all of my friends, and just go out and party together, basically. So a lot of times she was there. She was there for a lot of the like breaks, like winter break or summer break. She was there with me a lot of the times. And now come to think of it, she never once invited me to come like stay with her, hang out with her. Not ever once, not even as a joke, like never. But she was always invited to hang out with me. And, you know, it's just these little things that I think about now where I'm like, you know, I should have seen it. Like, those were the clues. Those were the red flags. Like, hello, Sabrina, like you should have seen it. But I didn't want to see it. That was the problem. Like, I didn't want to see it. I also didn't, I didn't love myself enough at that time to think that I deserved to be to be treated better. Like, I just thought that that's how it is. And I was grateful, and I was like, I don't want to complain about this because, like, this is my best friend. Like, why would I complain about these things? Like, she cares about me. She loves me. Like, she's my best friend. She's here hanging out with me and partying. Like, why would I bring this up? Why would I complain? Like, that would just show that I'm not grateful for the friendship. So I never brought it up. I never, like, really said anything about that because I didn't think it was worth it. I very much regret that now because those were my signs and I should have said something, or I should have put myself first and just walked away from a lot of moments. But unfortunately, that's not what ended up happening. Meanwhile, while I was in that school, my entire goal was to stay in that school for a little bit of time until my NCAA eligibility was cleared, and then I'd be able to transfer over to that school up north because the coach was telling me that he had a scholarship for me ready whenever I was ready. So I had the opportunity to basically go to the same school that my best friend was at and, like, basically have, like, a college experience with your best friend. Like, that's, like, honestly, like, the dream, right? But unfortunately, there was a few things that ended up happening at the school that was just, like, very strange and very weird when it came to the coach. A lot what Serena was telling me, as well as a lot of, like, the girls at the time that I knew on that team ended up telling me what was happening. And the coach ended up losing his job, but not for what he should have lost his job on, for sexual harassment. He just ended up just kind of, like, quitting or getting fired, but not for that reason. I think the school tried to hide it, even though I remember one of the girls' moms was, like, fighting really, really hard to, you know, get him. I don't know what the goal is, but she was fighting really hard. I would see a lot of the posts and stuff on Instagram, and I was, like, following that because my best friend was at that school. I just remember asking Serena about it, and it was very strange to me because she was very nonchalant about it. Like, I was angry. Like, these girls, like, I knew them, but we weren't as close as she was probably with them, because, like, they were close with her on the same team and everything. So to me, I was like, I was angry. I was livid hearing all these stories. And I was like, this is insane. Like, this is not okay. Like, I can't believe this is happening. Like, I was the one angry speaking out. And I just remember her just kind of being like, well, never did anything to me. Like, very nonchalant, like, who cares type of attitude. And I didn't understand how she could be so nonchalant and calm about it. Like, it didn't really matter. Like, I didn't understand that. I understand it now, because part of covert narcissism is a lack of empathy. So I understand it now. And now, going over my own story and remembering all of these, like, little key moments were, again, signs and moments for me to, like, recognize that there was a lack of empathy there, because it was just so strange to me. Like, how are you not as angry? You talk to these girls. Like, aren't you friends with these girls? How are you not, like angry that this happened to them? It was just mind-blowing to me that she just was very quick during the conversation to just throw it over her shoulder and just be like, whatever, I'm transferring, it doesn't matter. And I don't know, it was just very strange to me. So she ended up transferring to a different school, and I ended up staying at my school because I had a scholarship to go up north. But since all of that is gone, the coach is gone, and all that scandal is happening, I was like, all right, forget it. I do enjoy the school that I'm in. I do enjoy the friends that I've made. And I was like, I'm just going to stay here. I like it. I enjoy it. So I'm going to stay here. So me and her kept having little communication. Honestly, it was a lot of me texting her, me calling her. And if I didn't call or text, she would not reach out to me, to be completely honest. But you know, it was a very one-sided friendship, and I did not acknowledge that. I didn't want to see it. I didn't want to see the reality of it. I like, you know, she was my best friend. I cared for her so much. And I was just like, I didn't want to see it that way. So I was always the one reaching out to her. I was always the one calling her. And sometimes she'd reach back out. Sometimes, like, after a few months, she'd respond. But when she got a boyfriend, that was a whole different story. That's when she would fall off the face of the earth and I wouldn't hear from her for like months at a time. Which again, I thought was very weird because I too had a boyfriend at the time. And I still was able to like hang out with you and invite you to come hang out and party with us and like all of this stuff. It was just, it was very strange to me. And I didn't understand it. But you know what? I was just like, that's how she is. Like, I love her, I care for her, I just need to accept it and move on, right? But things at her new school, it was still the same type of behaviors. Like, she never incorporated me into her life, like never told me too much about her life. And I found that strange because like when I would talk to her, I would tell her everything that was going on my end, but she would just give me very limited information. I didn't know much about the boyfriend that she had, didn't know much about anything. And then she had a like college best friend at that time. And I met her once and she was really, really nice. I really liked her. But suddenly they fell off for some reason. And I just remember asking Serena, like, what happened with that college best friend? Like, you guys were thick as thieves, like always hanging out. And she kind of looked at me and was like, I have no idea. Like, just one day she packed her bags and left the shared dorm. And I just remember thinking to myself, how do you have no idea about that? Like, how? Like, there's no way she just like packed her bags and left, like without telling you what's going on, without anything at all. I was like, this is just so strange. But again, she had that attitude of like, it's whatever, it's no big deal, very nonchalant. Like, it didn't really matter to her that this person who was her roommate and best friend in college up and left and stopped talking to her and like basically like went no contact with her. No thought, no care, no empathy. Like, I just thought that that was so strange. I was like, how are you not like reaching out to her? How are you not like angry or at least sad or hurt? Like, how are you just like, ah, it's just another Tuesday, like kind of just like very nonchalant, very no care in the world. And again, that was another moment where I was like, this is so, so strange. So I did later find out what happened between that college best friend and her, but not through any good means, to be honest. Like, this is a confession of mine. God. So there was one time in Serena and I, our friendship, I wanted to like stalk my ex through another account. So I asked her if I could use her Facebook and I asked her if I could have her password and she gave it to me. So I ended up going on there just to like see, you know, because he cheated on me and everything. So I just wanted to stalk him a little bit because I blocked him on everything else. So I used the Facebook to stalk him and see like what he's up to here and there. And I saw like in one of her messages, it was like the ex college best friend. And I knew I shouldn't do it. I knew I shouldn't do it, but I was curious as hell. So I clicked on it. And the last conversations they had literally explained it all. And made me realize that she knew what happened. She just like lied to my face and said she had absolutely no idea why this girl like up and left. Like, the girl literally told her in the conversation. It was how Serena basically ghosted her and ditched her and left her waiting because her boyfriend texted her. Basically, Serena and this friend was supposed to like meet up for coffee and Serena ditched her. And then later on, the friend found out that she ditched her for the boyfriend. She confronted her on it and told her about it. And I mean, she apologized through text, but that was like the last conversation that they had between each other. And I guess after that, the girl like packed her bags and left. But what really like bothered me the most was not what happened. It was the fact that she pretended that she had absolutely no idea what happened, that she literally looked in my face and lied to my face and said she had absolutely no idea, and used this weaponized incompetence to get away with holding herself accountable for how she honestly hurt that friend. She ditched her. Like, imagine you're sitting there waiting for your friend to show up, and then this friend never shows up, and later you find out that they ditched you for a guy. Like, I would be so livid too. And she didn't take any accountability and lied to my face about it and pretended like she didn't know. And that was so shocking. So shocking to me. But again, let me preface, I was naive, stupid, and I really just want to shake my old self so hard, because did that stop me from being friends with Serena? No, it didn't. Because again, I made excuses and I was like, oh, well, I just saw a little snippet. Like, I don't really know what happened. Like, blah, 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 blah. It's very frustrating. It's very frustrating talking about this story. It's very frustrating having to live it. It's very frustrating going to therapy and talking about the story. And like, having your therapist try to get you to ground yourself and to forgive yourself for a lot of things, where I just want to go in the past and just shake myself silly and be like, hello, the signs were there. Like, hello. But again, you know, we live and learn, and I need to work on that self-forgiveness part. So while Serena was with this boyfriend, she would just completely disappear, vanish into thin air, like never existed. Like, I wouldn't hear from her for months at a time. And I'd ask her, like, hey, what's going on, all this stuff, and she's just kind of like, oh, I just forget to text, I'm just terrible at texting, all this stuff. But you know, you see them on Instagram and Facebook all the time, so you question that validity of that. Like, just, I don't know, it's just very strange behavior to me. Then there was one day where she called me. And she was like super excited on the phone. And she's like, I'm coming to our hometown. She's like, I'm coming. I'm flying down, bringing my boyfriend. And like, he's going to meet my parents. But like, I want to hang out with you because I want him to meet you, all of this stuff. And actually, no, scratch that. I don't think she said, I want him to meet you. I'm not gonna say that, because she didn't say that. That's what I assumed. Okay, so I'm gonna make that very clear. She wanted to hang out with me, but she never said the words, I want you to meet him. Okay, so let me just preface that, because that was an assumption that I made, a mistake that I made. In fact, I was more excited to see her and like this new guy, because they were together forever. And like, I was just like, oh, this is probably the guy. Like, she's probably going to end up marrying this man. Like, I'm so excited. And I was like thinking to myself, oh my God, I'm being the maid of honor. This is so exciting. Like, all of these like thoughts in my head. So she's on the phone with me saying like, oh, we should totally make plans. Like, I'm going to be there on this and this day. And she was going to stay there for like 10 days. And that one of those days we should like make a plan and hang out. And I was like, oh yes, definitely. At this point, I don't think I've seen her in like 2 years or something. So I was like super excited to see her. And I was like, this is awesome. This is amazing. I just remember like working really hard at work so I can save up some money so that I could, I think at that time there was something wrong with the car. There was no car and my dad had to rent a car for me. Or it was like my dad had to use the car. Something was up with the car and my dad had to rent a car for me. So I was like saving up money so I had enough money to like give for gas, for whatever trips, all that stuff. And I also remember buying her a gift and buying him a gift. I think I bought him like a hat and I bought her like some sort of, I think it was a sweater that was like my school sweater. So it had like the school name on it. And I had those gifts ready for them. And I was like super, super excited for her to like be there and super excited to have like a car for myself for the weekend. And yeah, I was just like, I was stoked. The day she arrived, she texted me and she was like, I'm here, can't wait to see you. And I was like, oh, me too, like super excited. So I texted her back. I was like, please let me know when, what day we can hang out and all that stuff. And I told her I had a car, I think. I'm pretty sure I told her I had a car. I had like a rental because I was like super excited about that. Yeah. A few days go by, I don't hear from her. You know, I make the excuse, oh, she's probably just like super excited, like her boyfriend's there to meet her parents, probably really nervous, like all this stuff, like she's probably gonna need a little bit of time and she's probably hanging out with him, so she's super excited. I probably hear from her like later down the week. I think it was either on the 7th or 8th day that she was in town that I was like, huh, this is weird, she hasn't texted me at all, and like it's cutting it close, like she's about to leave. So I ended up calling her and texting her and being like, hey, is there a plan? Like, are we going to see each other? And I didn't hear from her. She never texted me back. She never like called me back. Like she didn't make plans, nothing like that. And I just remember thinking to myself, like, this is very strange and weird behavior. And on the last day that she was there, she ended up texting me this text message that I will never forget. It basically said, hey, so sorry, we're heading to the airport now, maybe next time. And I just remember thinking to myself, what a bitch. That's what I thought to myself. I was like, what a fucking bitch. Because I'm sitting here waiting this whole time. My dad rented a car for me so I'd have a car to like meet her. Oh, was I scared telling my dad, because he was going to throw a freaking temper tantrum, like just, you know, spending all that money, and, you know, I didn't go see her. So, wow. Yeah, that was a conversation. But I was just like, what in the world? That's what you text me. You text me on the last second. You're heading to the airport. So you don't even have to see me. You don't even have to make 5 minutes plan to see me. I was just like, this is unreal. And in that moment, that was the first time ever where I thought to myself, we should not be friends anymore. That was the first time that thought crossed my mind. But again, I was naive, stupid, and very forgiving. Very forgiving. So I kind of just like forgave her for it. I did have a conversation with her later down the line about it. And that's when she ends up telling me that he doesn't like me, that her boyfriend thinks that I'm a bad influence and doesn't like me at all. And that's, I thought, was very strange to tell me that, especially since the guy doesn't even know me. I've never met him, but yet he hates me. He has like this loathing hatred for me. That was weird. I was like, that's not adding up. Why does he hate me? And when I asked her that, she couldn't really come up with anything besides like, he thinks I'm a bad influence. And I'm like, where? Like, where does he think I'm a bad influence? So it was just very strange to me. And then again, a thought crossed my mind, like that little voice in your head where it's like, it's because she's talking bad about you to him. It's because she's talking mean stuff to him behind your back. Again, I shooed that voice away and I was like, there's no way that my best friend is talking behind my back. She's my best friend. She loves me. She cares about me. A best friend would never talk about someone behind their back, right? Yeah, right. Well, naively, I ended up forgiving her. And the way I did that was to honestly start blaming him. And I told myself that he's the reason why she's like MIA. He's the reason why she's not texting me. He's the reason why I didn't see her when she came over. He's just like one of those guys that must be like super controlling, that must be like just a horrible boyfriend. Like I just started creating that in my head, even though like I didn't know him and he didn't know me. So, but I didn't want to see the reality of things. So I made it easier for myself to live in a Delulu fantasy land and tell myself that he's the reason why she's behaving that way when that's not the truth. So life moved on, ended up graduating college early and getting a job as a therapist in a mental health substance abuse facility. And I was working my way into the mental health space because I really just wanted to be a full-blown therapist. So I ended up going to London for my master's degree in King's College London. No idea how I got in there. I was the only American there. and it was a class filled with probably less than 10 students. So it was super, super hard to get into that school. I have no idea how I did it, but apparently some miracle happened that I got accepted to that school. And I started to work with world-renowned researchers in the field of behavioral psychology and addiction. Serena did come visit me in London, so that was a lot of fun. I didn't see many issues or anything really at that time. I think she did say a few like backhanded comments, like just joking at me, but again, I thought that was like our banter. I didn't think anything ill of it at that time. I didn't think it was like anything. Like, I mean, it was just comments, and I had enough confidence in myself at that time that I didn't take it personally. I was just like, haha, that's kind of funny. It's like a joke. And I also remember my friend who was at that school with me. She was like, I guess like my closest friend there. He wasn't a big fan. She told me that she was a little too nice for her, like that it was a little too fake in her opinion. But again, these are all like little things that people tell you that you really don't pay attention to, because it's like, you know, we're all told look at all the red flags, but the thing is, like, it's not like it's like red flag after red flag after red flag, like back to back to back. There's also the really, really good times in that friendship. So you tend to like look at the really, really good times, that friendship when you had fun and you enjoyed each other's company, and you pay attention to that more than the behaviors and the small little comments and the small little digs. So you kind of just not really pay attention to those. And that's what I did. I kind of wanted to focus on the happy, positive memories. I wanted to focus on hanging out with my best friend. I wanted to focus on like how much fun I was having with her. I want to harp or focus on any of like the little comments here and there. Like it was insignificant for me at the time, because being around her was more important to me. So, you know, people tell you pay attention to the red flags, but it's hard when there's also like the good times that happen too. So it's hard to recognize and differentiate. So I ended up graduating from King's College London. I also ended up publishing some of my work into an academic journal. I was like super, super proud of that, because I was the only one that ended up doing that in that class. So if anyone says that Americans are not smart enough to do anything, I was the only American there in a school in London, UK, and I was able to publish my work, and I was the only one in the class to publish it. So don't say that Americans are not smart, because we are pretty, pretty smart. But honestly, our classes in the US are pretty, pretty easy with multiple choice. I literally wished that at the UK school had multiple choice, because every single test that we had was 10 questions. You had to pick 5 of them, and you had to write an essay. You had to write all the information that you knew about that subject from that question. And if you did not study, if you did not know your information, you were going to fail. And they were not afraid of failing you. They failed, I think, 2 people in that class, or one person in that class. At least one person in that class failed. So like it was difficult. And I remember sitting next to a doctor from Indonesia. Yes, a doctor from Indonesia. And he was sketching a brain on his like blank sheet of paper. And I just remember sitting next to him being like, wow, this man can sketch a brain from his own memory, and it looks so realistic, and I can't even draw a stick figure, let alone sketch a brain. It was a little intimidating, but the government paid for him to go to that school. That's like how insane it was. So I couldn't even believe I was there. But it was definitely one incredible experience, and the fact that I was able to publish my work was even more incredible for me. And also, let me add, please trigger warning right here. So if you don't want to hear about this, then please like skip through a little bit. I did all of that too, while at the same time going through another trauma that I experienced. So I think a lot of you can understand when I say the words hashtag me too. But on one of the winter breaks, when I went back to the United States to visit my family for Christmas, I was SA'd, and that is what happened. And I ended up going back to school. And honestly, I couldn't have done it without my friends there. I couldn't have done it without my friends. Like, my two friends in that school were the ones that really kept me going. So when people talk about depression, it's one of those things that I completely understand so much. I was in such a bad place, such a bad place. I just remember the only thing that I could get myself to do is go outside and smoke a cigarette, which is kind of funny because I was studying behavioral psychology and addiction. So like part of me coping was not a healthy coping skill, and that was like going outside and smoking a cigarette. But that was the only way I could feel alive, because I was just trying my best to just survive, to be honest. But the thing was, I was lucky because from what I was studying, I knew the steps. I knew what I was experiencing. I knew what were the potentials if I didn't work super hard to get myself back. And I just remember it was one of those times where depression really hit, and I laid in bed and I could not get up. I could not eat. I could not sleep. I just wanted to lay. I did not do anything. I was laying in bed for days. Couldn't even get myself to shower. How lack of energy I had, let alone eat. I lost so much weight during that time. And I remember also getting up, and when I did have the energy to shower, I would be in the shower scrubbing my skin raw. I felt like I needed to scrub my skin till I had nothing left so I could just, I don't know, like have my skin grow back and be a whole new person. And it was just such a horrific time at that time. And I had the two people that were there for me. Shout out to Maryam and Mahmoud. I'm not going to change your names because you deserve a shout out. To like, Maryam would come to my door, make sure that I had food. She'd like make food, cook. It was Pakistani food. It was delicious. Oh my God. She'd make sure that I would eat. She'd sit there in the room with me and make sure, watch me eat, make sure that I would eat. And my friend Mahmoud always was there. He's also a trained psychiatrist, so I think I got the best deal. So he would always like sit there and listen and talk to me and make sure that I'm doing well and doing good, and that I'm not like doing anything that is not good. So those two really helped me through a very, very tough time. So I have no idea how I was able to survive that next semester. But if it wasn't for them, that I would have not survived that at all. And during that time, it was only those two that were really, really there for me. I did tell Serena what happened. But I mean, I don't know. I don't want to blame anybody for not being there for me at that time, because that's a lot. A lot of pain and energy, and maybe she just couldn't deal with it. And I understand that. So like, I get it. So I didn't really blame anybody who wasn't able at that time to like be there for me. So it was fine. Just, I knew that I had to pull myself out of that dark space, and I did. And it was the hardest thing ever. It's like, you know, when depression hits you, you just do not have the motivation to do anything. You don't want to get up. You don't want to talk to anybody. You don't want to eat. You don't want to sleep. You don't want to watch TV. You don't have motivation to do absolutely anything. And I knew that the only way for me to get out of that hole was to do all the things that I was too tired to do. I had to get up. I had to start a routine. I had to shower. I had to eat. I had to text my friends. I had to keep up. I had to. And if I did not force myself to do all the things that I didn't want to do, I would not have survived. I would probably still have major depression, but I did what I needed. I ended up going to therapy. I ended up like talking things out, and thank God, like, honestly, therapy is one of those things I will recommend to my dying breath, because it's one of those things, just having somebody just to talk things out and just sit there and like you can bawl your eyes out. Who cares? Like, who cares? But it's somebody that can like literally be there for you. And I went to therapy and I started sharing and telling them what happened to me. And I just remember for a long time, I couldn't say the R word. I couldn't say it. I still don't want to say it, but it was a lot. And I'm sorry if this triggers anyone. Like, I really hope you skip through it as best as possible, but it is part of my story and it's part of my healing and it's part of a lot of the things that made me who I am. And made me as strong as I am today. So thank you for listening. All right, I'm back. I had to take a little bit of a break because I was getting a little too emotional on that story and that part of my story. But let me get back into it and continue where I left off. After I graduated from King's College London, I ended up almost getting married. My God. Yeah, I ended up going to Tunisia, where this is where my mom's side of the family is from. Throughout my London school year, I was dating a guy that we got engaged and I thought that he was the guy for me. That's where I started to learn what narcissism looked like. And he was very toxic and he wasn't a very nice guy to me. A lot of things that he ended up saying, a lot was on my weight. And I just remember things that he would say was like, he called me gorilla because I was hairy. He didn't like that I had hair on my arms, even though it's like peach fuzz, you don't really see it. So he would want me to like basically shave or wax everything. So I would wax myself from head to toe, like everything would be waxed down because he would like kind of just mock me and call me gorilla. And anytime that he would see me, he would like rub my arm or my leg or whatever when it's a little bit prickly and just like kind of make fun of me there. Other things were about my weight, where he would tell me that I should send him a picture of my weight on the scale every single morning, and if it's not to his liking, then he would only allow me to eat an apple and water a day. So I would find myself kind of binge eating during that time, sneak eating during that time, and I didn't understand that that was like not healthy. And, you know, he would go around calling me fat girl and calling me, if you guys understand Tunisian or Arabic, he calls me bouteya, which means like fatty, basically like big clumpy chubby girl in Tunisian dialect. And it was just like a lot of horrible words. Yeah. So I almost got into a 90-day fiancé situation with that one. Thank God that did not happen. I don't know, some way, somehow, it was like, I believe in divine timing, to be honest. I believe that every person comes into your life to teach you a lesson or to get you to move down a path in a certain way. And with him, I wasn't an American citizen at that time. I had a green card at the time. And I could always naturalize, but I just like was too lazy to do it. Like I could probably naturalize like 10 years earlier, but I was too lazy to do it. I was like, meh, whatever. I don't want to go through that whole process. So what ended up happening is because we were engaged and because like we wanted to start like the marriage process, I had a green card in the US, which means I had a passport that was like European. And every time I went to that country to like get marriage certificate, all that stuff, they're like, you don't exist here because you've never lived here. You don't have an address here. We can't give you paperwork because like you don't exist to us here. So they're like, you have to go to where you live. And I lived in the United States. So every time I went to the United States, they're like, no, we can't really give you that because you're not like, they want citizenship and you're not citizen. So like, it doesn't work that way. So I like was at a crossroads where I couldn't get like a marriage certificate license thing because of the passport situation. So I ended up going towards naturalization. And through that process, it's just so funny how like divine timing works. Through that process, I got naturalized. And on the day that I wanted to start like sending in the money and the application for the K-1 visa, this is the day I found out that he cheated on me. And it's one of those things that Tunisia is very small. So you hear from one person, and that one person knows this person that knows this person that knows your cousin that knows your cousin's friend, and blah, 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 blah. So somehow through the grapevine, I ended up hearing that he was like hanging out and seeing another girl and like texting another girl. And yeah, it was one of those things. And it's kind of funny because women's instinct is one of like crazy thing, because I looked at his Facebook account, and from all the 3,000 people that he had on that Facebook account, a lot of them were girls. I scrolled down all the way and picked the one where my gut was like, she's it. And they'd never had any like exchanges or likes or comments or anything like that on their Facebook posts or whatever. It was like, you know, quiet, but I picked the one and she was it. Like from all the 3,000 people, I picked that and I knew it. And yeah, we broke up and that was it. I did not do the K-1 visa, but I had my naturalization, became a U.S. citizen. And because of that, I'm glad, because that is why I ended up in the place that I am now, and being able to like get the job that I can now. So like everything kind of worked out perfectly the way it was supposed to. Also, the reason why I bring up the narcissistic ex-fiance is because I just remember also telling my best friend about him and like just little things that he said to me, you know, all these types of stuff. And like usually you'd think that your friend would be appalled, right? No, never really cared, never really said anything, wasn't like opinionated, didn't like say anything where it's like, oh, this doesn't sound good, this doesn't sound healthy, like nothing at all. Just didn't care, which makes what happens later in the story even more confusing and surprising. Also, what was quite surprising that after that friendship breakup, I started to realize how many narcissistic people I had in my life. Like I started to realize they were everywhere. They were everywhere. And I kept people like that in my life. And I was just like surrounded by them. And I didn't understand why. I was like, am I attracting these type of people? No, I didn't attract them. I kept them because it was familiar to me. It's what I grew up in. That's what I was used to. I grew up in a narcissistic family dynamic. So that's what I thought love was. And it was a very, very big transition to start to pick differently and to start to see things differently and to recognize that that is not what love is. So after London and that whole ex-fiance debacle, I moved back to the United States, and that's where I started working at a rehabilitation hospital with patients that suffered from comorbidity, which is mental health issues as well as substance abuse issues. So I had a caseload of probably 15 patients a week, which was a lot to handle. And it was a very, very difficult experience because it's a lot, you know, you're dealing with all sorts of people and they're suffering from addiction. And it's just one of those subjects that is just so difficult to explain and to understand what they're going through and what they're also putting their families through. It's just, wow. I have no words for it. But one of the things I really started to notice is the ones that have gone through the most and have suffered the most and have, you know, they deal with so much mental health issues. They're somewhat the smartest people in the room and somewhat also the most creative and the most talented people in the room. And the ones that I feel like they just have to go through that, like it's something where they have to overcome that mental health or that trauma or whatever it is. That is the cost of their greatness. And if they overcome it, it's as if like they can soar within their talents. Like the people in there were incredibly talented, from music to art to the way that they speak to how they carry themselves, like the most talented people I've ever met. And I feel like the most talented ones just seem to suffer the most as well. But even though I really, really loved working in that field and being a therapist and helping as much as I possibly could, I also felt like there was something more for me. I felt like I needed something else. I felt like New York was calling me. Like, I wanted to go to New York. I wanted to experience my life because I feel like I've just been working, going to school, working and doing all that. And I just wanted some time to myself. I was also, you know, jumping into the work, even though I wasn't healing myself from all the traumas that I was experiencing and that crazy breakup. Like, I realized that I can't help other people if I'm struggling myself. So I decided to just move on. And it kind of happened in the perfect way because that hospital ended up like laying off half of their employees. I don't know what happened with their finances, but one day I get a call. It's like, oh, we're laying off many people. So I was one of them. And it was like kind of perfect timing because I was like, no, this is my time to pack my bags and go to New York City.